Scotia, Sufis, the People of the Past, Volume 2. Talks on Sufism given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 6.
The first question. Recently, mind almost stopping, I have suddenly felt myself and everything around me to be existing exactly in Jesus' time, and there has been a very strong sense of Jesus himself. Could you say something about this kind of phenomena? The question is from Sumindra. It is the same drama, enacted again and again. The script remains the same, only the actors change. Friedrich Nietzsche has a very beautiful theory about it, the theory of eternal recurrence. It may not be true in details, but the idea is significant and profound. It is like seasons. Summer comes, followed by the rains, and then comes winter, and again summer. In summer, there will be summer flowers. In rains, there will be rain flowers. In winter, there will be winter flowers. No single flower will ever be repeated. But the essential idea will be repeated again and again. It is eternal recurrence. The story is the same. In its basics, it is never different. It may be Krishna or Christ, Mahavira or Muhammad. Actors change. Different players participate. But the essential core of it is eternally the same. So when you will be deeply moving in meditation, as Sumindra is moving every day, and when mind will be almost stopping, as he says in his question, many things you will become aware of, which were already there, but you were not aware. Now Jesus is very deep in the Western consciousness. It is an archetype. Whenever you will see something closely resembling it, your unconscious will release the archetype to the conscious. Because Sumindra has lived as a Christian for many lives, Christ has gone very deep into his consciousness. He cannot remember Krishna. He has no relationship with Krishna. That symbol, that metaphor, does not exist in his unconscious mind. If he has been a Hindu for many lives, then he would have felt as if it is the time of Krishna. Or if he has been a Buddhist for many lives, then he would have felt the presence of Buddha. But it is the same. Buddha's body is different than Jesus' body. But that is hidden behind the body. That is not different. That inner purity, that inner innocence, that primal innocence is the same. In Sumitra's unconscious, Jesus is very deep. And it will be felt by many of you. For another reason also, although that is not true about Sumitra, he was not in Jesus' time. But here are many people who were. The greater number of my sannyasins are Jews. It is not accidental. It can't be accidental. Jews don't exist in India, not at all. So many Jews reaching to me. There must be something profound in it. They have missed Jesus. And their unconscious search continues. And in a very unconsciously way, they are smelling something here. This time they don't want to miss. More and more Jews will be coming. That time they missed. And it was difficult to accept Jesus in those days. In these 2000 years, much has happened. Jesus is more relevant now. More in tune with human consciousness now. Moreover, Jesus was a Jew. It was very difficult for Jews to accept him. As it is difficult for Hindus to accept me. Mind plays strange games. If somebody is born in your religion, it becomes very difficult for your ego to accept him as enlightened. Or if somebody is born into the same village as you, it becomes even more difficult. Or if you have been somebody studying in the same school and suddenly the rumor arises that he has become enlightened or has been chosen by a God as his prophet, you will reject the idea outright. You know the man from his childhood. You know him in and out. How he can become the chosen of the God. While you were there, how God can choose him? How God can dare? If he was going to choose, he would have chosen you. It becomes very difficult for the ego. India is going to miss me, just for the simple reason that I have been born here. This accident is going to be a calamity for India. You don't see many Indians here. You may not have looked at this in this way. Why they are not here? It is very difficult for their egos to accept me. Particularly Jainas, the small religious group in India of Jainas. It was an accident. I was born a Jaina. You will not find them here. In the Jainas also there is a small sect. Sometimes you will find few Hindus here. Lesser will be the number of Jainas. And even lesser, the number of that particular sect to which I belonged in this accidental birth. There is a very small sect of the Jainas. Jainas are very few, 30 left in India. And in Jainas there are many sects. One sect is Samayya. The word comes from Samadhi. Those who only believe in Samadhi. It is the same word that has become in Japanese Sanmai and later on Satori. You will rarely find a Samaya here. Impossible. There are only few thousands. They all know me. They are well acquainted with me, but that is the problem. Because of that, they cannot come here. India is going to miss. Except India, nobody is going to miss. Everybody will be more in tune with me. Jews has come in a great number. They have the feel here, something is happening. The same drama is being enacted again in the 20th century. Something of Christ consciousness. And me they can accept more easily than they could have ever done Jesus. He was a Jew, a carpenter's son. It was almost impossible to accept him. So more of you by and by will start feeling a kind of deja vu, as if this is no more 20th century, as if these 20 centuries have suddenly disappeared from your consciousness, as if you are again in the days of Jesus in Jerusalem walking with him, or on the Galilee moving with him, or in Bethlehem. To many of you, that dream will unfold. Because to understand me, that will be the closest metaphor for the Western consciousness. No Hindu will ever feel that something of the Christ is happening here. If he ever comes to feel, he will feel Krishna. No Buddhist will feel about Christ. If he ever feels, he will feel something about Buddha. These are archetypes, metaphors in the unconscious. And when you come closer to your death, you start releasing the poetry of your soul. Sumindra is right. He says recently, mind almost is stopping. I have suddenly felt myself and everything around me to be existing exactly in Jesus' time, and there has been a very strong sense of Jesus himself. Could you say something about this kind of phenomena? It is tremendously significant. Go deeper into it. Don't give any resistance to it. This will also disappear. Just as conscious disappears, one day unconscious also disappears. But it is better than the conscious to live in the unconscious metaphors, because they are deeper. And he is perfectly right in saying that mind almost is stopping. Because if it stops absolutely, then even Jesus will disappear. Because these are all mind things. Ultimately, all words, all metaphors are mind things. Just a little of the mind is left. Be ready, Sumindra, to drop that too. But there is no hurry, and don't be impatient, and don't fight with it. It is going on its own. It is on its dying bed, death bed. The second question. After 2 days' discourse, I met Satya on the stairs. She was laughing. I wanted to sob, but felt I must lighten up and laugh. That she was positive and I was negative. I laughed a lie. Could I be true to myself and meet her in that moment? The question is from Vandana. This is something to be understood by everybody. Satya in a laughing space. Something is stirring in her. She is not the laughing type. She is the crying type. When she had come here, whenever she will come to me, she will start crying. Tears were easier for her. Now suddenly tears have disappeared and laughter has arisen. And such a mad laughter that she goes on laughing for hours. It has almost become painful to her. The whole night she goes on laughing. Naturally one becomes afraid what is happening for no reason at all. She has not been the laughing type, so the whole life she has repressed her laughter. Her type was the crying one, the sad. Now suddenly the type is changing, swinging from one polarity to another polarity. Before it stops in the middle and the balance arises, it has to go to the other polarity. The whole life she repressed laughter unknowingly. Now the repression has disappeared. The lid has been taken off. Now she cannot cry. The tears are no more there. The whole life's laughter is coming up with vengeance. It is almost hysterical. But a beautiful space, because an indication of a great change, a transformation, an alchemical change. Tears are beginning laughter. Soon, laughter will also disappear. As tears have disappeared, laughter will disappear. Then she will come to the exact middle. Then there will be great balance, equilibrium. That equilibrium is the goal. Neither the negative nor the positive, because both are half. Yes, if you have to choose between the negative and the positive, choose the positive. That is a lesser kind of evil, that's all. But if you have a choice between tranquility and the positive, choose the tranquility. Then positive is nothing. Then positive is almost negative in comparison to tranquility. Good, if there is only one choice, tears are laughter, laugh. But if there is a choice of being silent, then tears and laughter both have to be dropped. One becomes silent. She will soon come to that silence. After this storm of laughter, there will be a great silence, as it always comes after the storm. This is a release. The release of repressed laughter. It has to be taken off her consciousness. It is being taken off. And she is pouring like anything. Now, Vandana says, after 2 days discourse, I met Satya on the stairs. She was laughing. I wanted to sob, but felt I must lighten up and laugh, that she was positive and I was negative. I laughed a lie. Could I be true to myself and meet her in that moment? Yes, there is no other way to meet anybody. Meeting is possible only if you are true, because only two true persons meet. Logically it seems Satya is laughing, And logically, Vandana thought, if I also laugh, there will be a kind of dialogue. We will be both in the same space. But how you can be both in the same space? Her laughter is true, your laughter is a lie. These are not the same thing. A true laughter and a laughter that is not true are poles apart. How can you meet? Truth and falsity can never meet. If Vandana had sobbed as she was feeling, there would have been a meeting. But that looks illogical. That somebody is laughing and you start crying, that looks illogical. That looks you are going in a different direction, then how there will be a meeting? But let me tell you, you are not going in a different direction. If you are being true and she is being true, you are going in the same direction. It does not matter what kind of truth is happening to you. If Vandana had cried great tears, if she had wept as she was feeling, if she had been true to her feeling, there would have been a meeting. Then the laughter and the crying are not opposite because both are true. Only two truths can meet. Only two truths can have a dialogue. But she missed the point, as many of you would have missed. Logical mind says she is laughing, and if I cry, then we will fall apart. Then how will there be ever a communion between us? And then the mind said she is positive and you are negative. That doesn't matter. You can meet a positive person through your negativity. The only thing needed is the same earth of truth, the same ground of truth. Positive and negative can meet. In fact, they meet beautifully. In fact, it happens sometimes positive and positive cannot meet, negative and negative cannot meet, because they don't have the pull of the opposite. They are kind of homosexuals. When positive and positive are there, when negative and negative are there, meeting is more easy and more enriching when it is heterosexual. Laughter and crying can meet very beautifully. That is the meeting of man and woman, day and night, life and death. You can ask the scientist, the physicist, he will say, only opposite poles meet. The positive repels the positive. The negative repels the negative. Only negative and positive meet. If you bring two positive magnets close, they will repel. If you bring one negative and one positive, they will join together in a marriage. So the only thing needed is truth. Don't be worried about the positive and the negative. Don't listen to the logical mind, because logical mind is absurd. Life is bigger than logic. Just see Vandana feeling like crying, and Satya laughing, and both are true. Then there is a common ground. Then they are moving in the same direction. Then they can hold hands. Satya may go on laughing and Vandana may go on crying. But there will be a kind of marriage in that moment. There will be great communion in that moment. Both are being true. Remember, it is only truth that connects. It is only truth that bridges. Don't be worried about the negative and the positive. The only thing that has to be remembered always is authenticity. All falsehood creates barriers. The third question, why are people so fake? People are so fake because it pays. It is good policy. If you are true, you will be in danger. You can be true only in a true society, where truth is respected, loved. This society exists for lies. Here truth is not respected. Here truth is crucified. Here truth is killed. Lies are enthroned. That's why you see politics becomes so important in this world. Because politics is the game of lies. And the politicians become the most important people in the world. They should be the last, they become the first. Because this world, this whole society is based on lies. And if you live with liars, and you will live with this falsehood all around you, you have to be fake. It pays. It is economical. It is safe. It protects you. Otherwise, people will be against you. If you are true and they are all living for lies, they cannot tolerate you. And from the very beginning, a child starts learning that lies pay. If the child says the truth, he is beaten. If the child says the truth, it creates a kind of embarrassment to the parents. If the child is being truthful, nobody is for him. Everybody is against him. If he is lying, then he can protect himself. Lie becomes a kind of umbrella. And if he is lying, in tune with the parents' lies, then there is no problem at all. He can exist very smoothly. And children are very perceptive, sensitive. They learn whatever they see around. I have heard, returning after a lengthy absence to his family's spot on the beach, the youngster found them preparing to leave. "Come along," said the mother. "We are going to a restaurant for a good dinner." "I am not hungry," said the boy. "I have eaten 7 ice cream cones and 3 frankfurters." "Where on earth did you get 7 ice cream cones and 3 frankfurters?" asked his astounded mother. "You didn't have any money?" "I didn't need money. I just wandered all around the beach, crying as if I was lost. Crying as if I was lost." Now the child has learned a great trick. If the child pretends that he is lost, it pays. And that is the whole secret why people are fake. It pays. Whenever you are true, it harms you. And who is there to harm oneself and for what? The lie is a survival measure. I have heard an art collector chanced upon a painting bearing the signature Picasso. He purchased it immediately, hoping it would prove to be very valuable, but in nagging doubt about the possibility of it, of its being a forgery, compelled him to seek out Picasso's home. After much waiting, he finally gained a moment of Picasso's time and showed him the painting. "It is a fake," Ismet the great painter and Islam the door such. The collector was crestfallen and determined not to be taken again. However, some time later, he came across a different painting also bearing the signature Picasso. He carefully researched the history of this painting and purchased it only after fully documenting its authenticity. However, even with legal proof that this was a genuine Picasso, he still felt a twinge of doubt and resolved to satisfy his doubts by again visiting him. When he finally gained a moment of Picasso's time, the great painter took one look at the painting and said, "It is a fake." "But Picasso," pleaded the art collector, "I researched this painting thoroughly. I can prove that you yourself painted it." To this Picasso replied, "I often paint fakes." It happens. Even a painter starts learning what sells. Picasso's all the paintings are not original. More of them are fake, although they have been painted by him. Then what does he mean by saying that it is a fake? He is simply saying that he is just copying it from his other paintings. It is not original. It is a copy. It does not matter who is copying, somebody else or Picasso himself. It almost always happens when a person gets a Nobel Prize, then he never produces anything original. Then he goes on repeating his old story in new ways. Because it has paid so much, so he is stuck. He thinks it sells, so he goes on writing the same thing again and again. It has never happened up to now that after getting a Nobel Prize, a poet or a novelist has been able to do anything original again. The Nobel Prize is a kind of death knell. The person is finished. Because now he knows what pays. Now he has found the secret of success. Now he has the key. So why bother trying other keys? They may not be so successful. Why bother other directions and dimensions of creativity? One knows the right way to do a thing. So one goes on doing the right thing again and again and again and becomes fake. People are false because they have found a key. They know what makes life secure, comfortable, convenient, safe. Although convenience, comfort, safety, security don't bring any kind of blessing. They bring all kinds of miseries. They don't bring any happiness in life, because happiness is only through being original. Unless you have your original face, you will never be blessed. But to have the original face, you will have to pass through many inconveniences, uncomforts. The path is arduous. Keep it in mind that whenever you face a choice between convenience and joy, always choose joy, otherwise you will become fake. Whenever you have a choice between comfort and some adventure, choose the adventure, howsoever arduous. Otherwise, you will become a fake. Whenever you have a choice between security and insecurity, let insecurity be your love. Never choose security. Security makes people dead and dull. A perfectly secure person is already in his grave. He is no more alive. If you are alive, there is bound to be insecurity. More alive, more insecurity. Really, totally alive person lives moment to moment in insecurity. But then there is a great thrill. And always he is on the verge of the unknown. And always he is moving into something mysterious. The mysterious cannot be secure. Don't depend on bank balances. Don't depend on marriage. Don't depend on a comfortable and well-paying job. Don't depend on family, society and estate. People who have depended on those things are all around. You can see them, how dead they are. How dragging is their life. How sad their eyes. Not a single song in their heart. And never you will feel any dance in their feet. Impossible. You can go on searching in their life and you will find desert and more desert. Not a single oasis. Love does not bloom. Celebration they have not known. I have heard one Indian died, a very religious man, ritualistic, formal, has been doing all kind of things that the scriptures commands. So was very, very certain of reaching paradise. When he reached, he looked through the door and he was surprised. The paradise was looking almost like India. No difference, not at all. So he asked the angel standing on the gate, "What is the matter? It looks almost like India. I don't see any difference. Paradise is almost like our land, our country." And the man standing on the door said, "What are you talking about? And why you go on going down to me? This is not paradise and I am not an angel." This story is beautiful. It is hell. And the man standing on the door is not an angel but the devil. But hell will look like India. Hell will look like anything that you have become accustomed. If you are a German, then hell will look like German. If you are a Japanese, then hell will look like Japanese. If you are English, then hell will look exactly like England. Hell is that which you know. Meditate over it. Hell is that which you are acquainted with. Hell is the path, the known, the well-trodden path. Heaven is something unknown that you cannot compare with your past, cannot compare with your experience. There is no comparison. It is utterly new. Utterly. Absolutely. It is discontinuous. You have never known anything like it. But if you live a life of comfort and convenience and ritual and formality and life, a fake life, if you live a pseudo life, you live in hell and you will be living in hell in future too. You are creating it around yourself. Shake yourself up and get out of your so-called dull and dead life. start living again. And don't think what pays. It is always the wrong thing that pays in this world. The right thing never pays because there are no more people who can pay for the right thing. If you do something wrong, you will be paid very much. Just think, a poet is not paid, but a general is paid. And the general is doing the wrong thing of killing people. He is a murderer. The soldier is paid, not a painter. Those who bring death in worlds, they are paid. Can't you see? The army people are the well-paid people. They are the butchers and murderers. But they are the most well-paid, well-fed, living in good houses, having all facilities of life. Look at a poet who goes on singing songs of love. He will be a beggar. Think of a musician who brings music at your door, but he is a beggar. All that is right is not paid. The world is so wrong, it cannot be paid. The politicians are highly paid, highly respected. The newspapers are continuously full of their news. Have you ever heard in the newspapers anything else than politics? And these are the most mischievous people in the world. These are the people who make the earth a hell. But they are the well-paid people. Remember, if you think in terms of payment, you will be fake. If you want to be paid in this world with comfort, luxury, you will have to be fake. If you really want to be alive, then don't bother whether it pays or not. If it pays good, if it doesn't pay good. But then you will be living a life of great enrichment. You may not be rich, but your life will be enriched. You may not have fame, but you will have joy. You may not be known in the world, but you will be known to God, and that is all that is worth. And I am not saying that you all have to carry your crosses on your soldiers continuously. No, I am not saying. I never demand the impossible. When you live with false people, there is no need to create unnecessary conflict either. Avoid. You go on searching your life, your original face, but there is no need to come every day, every moment in conflict. Otherwise, that becomes your problem. Unnecessary wastage of energy. Follow the rules of ordinary life just as one follows the rules of a game. In India they say on the roads, keep to the left. So keep to the left. It has nothing of any importance. In America they keep to the right. That too is perfectly okay. When in America, keep to the right. When in India, keep to the left. And if some mad country exists somewhere where you have to keep in the center, keep in the center. You don't be worried. But always know that this is nothing fundamental. It has nothing to do with any truth. It is a convenience. And when there are so many people, you need not create inconvenience for others. You are at freedom to create all kinds of inconveniences for yourself. That is your freedom. But you need not create inconveniences for others. I have heard the great maestro Toscanini was as well known for his ferocious temper as for his outstanding musicianship. When members of his orchestra played badly, he would pick up anything in sight and hurl it to the floor. During one rehearsal, a flat note caused the genius to grab his valuable watch and smash it beyond repair. Shortly afterwards, he received from his devoted musicians a luxurious velvet-lined box containing two watches, one a beautiful gold timepiece, the other a cheap one on which was inscribed "For rehearsals only." So keep that in mind. When you are moving in the world, moving with people, there is no need to carry your cross. There is no need to go on shouting loudly that you are a martyr, are a Jesus, are a Mansur. There is no need. Follow the rules of the game. It is just a game. But remember always that the game should not become your whole life. That's all I would like my sannyasins to remember. That's why I don't take you out of society. Never it has been done before. For a single reason, it was never done before. The reason was, Buddha won't allow his sannyasins to live in the world. Because the problem was, if the sannyasin has to be true, it is difficult to live in the world, because with the people, many times you have to be polite, formal. Many times in life, you cannot continuously remember that you have to be true. People are so false. Just out of compassion, out of politeness, sometimes you may have to keep yourself quiet, not to say a word, because if you say something, that is going to hurt people unnecessarily. Or sometimes you will have to not do something which is not true. You can't be absolutely yourself when you are living with so many people. So Buddha said to his sannyasins, leave the world. Sacrifice your relationships to be true. Are others who have decided to live in the world, they sacrifice their truth to live in relationship. Now both are lopsided. You can leave the world, but then you will be leaving many opportunities to grow. You can go in a Himalayan cave and sit there. Of course, there will be no need to lie, because there will be nobody to lie, nobody to talk to, nobody to relate. You will be alone in the cave. You will be perfectly true. You can have your original face. But then you don't have any opportunities as challenges to provoke you into growth. You are out of life. And it is only life where people grow. Life is a great opportunity. There you will be secluded all alone, dull and dead. Again you will become dead. Because you will not have any possibility to respond. Yes, you will not be saying any untruth, but to whom you are going to say the truth? You will not be angry, right? But you will not be loving either. So this is something meaningless. Anger is dropped, but love also disappears. So the old kind of sannyasins become cold. They don't have any anger, a good thing. But they don't have any love. And that can't be praised. It is as if a person was afraid of illness, so he committed suicide. Now he will never be ill, that's true, but he will be never alive either. This is throwing the baby with the bath water. I am not in support of it. But these have been the two alternatives given up to now to humanity. One is leave the world, shrink into yourself. That is a kind of dull life again. Or live in the world and be false, because it is too troublesome to be true. I am giving you the golden mean. Live in the world and don't be of the world. You will be needed to be very, very alert, more alert than Buddhas, sannyasins. They need not be alert, they can go to sleep in their caves. You will have to be very, very alert, and you will have to keep two watches, one for rehearsals only, and one, the real one, for yourself. You will have to become a great actor. But when you act consciously, then you are not fake. When your conscious act is there, and you know that this is just an act, then it is not going to destroy your life. But when you forget that this is an act, and you become identified with it, then you become worldly. So the old definition of the worldly is to live in the world, and the non-worldly is to not live in the world, get out of it. My definition is different. The worldly is the one who gets into his act and becomes unconscious, and forgets that this is an act. It is as if you are playing on the stage, doing some roles. For example, you are in a drama, doing the role of Jesus or Pontius Pilate, and you forget that this is a role. And when the curtains fall, and you come home, you come as Pontius Pilate or Jesus Christ, then you will be in trouble. It has happened sometimes. Once it happened to one actor. He was playing for 1 year continuously around United States as Abraham Lincoln. Every night, from one town to another town, the party was traveling and he was the Abraham Lincoln. 1 year is a long time. He got mixed up. After 1 year, he forgot his real identity, that who he is, and he started saying that he is Abraham Lincoln. First people thought he is joking, but then it became serious. He came home, but he came as Abraham Lincoln. The wife tried to persuade him that now you get out of your role. The father tried to convince him that you are not Abraham Lincoln, but he won't listen. And he won't wear ordinary clothes either. He will wear the clothes that he was wearing on the stage. And he will walk like Abraham. He will stutter like Abraham. And his face also has become like Abraham. For 1 year he was pretending and pretending and pretending. It became so difficult that they had to bring him to the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist tried hard from one direction and another, but he won't say anything else. He will say, what are you talking? Have you gone mad? I am Abraham Lincoln. There is no way. They have a lie detector mechanism in America. They use in the courts. The concerned person stands on the mechanism, not aware that there is a mechanism underneath. It is like a cardiogram type thing. It makes a graph of your heartbeats. When you are speaking a truth, there are smooth lines. When suddenly you are ready to speak untruth, there is a gap. Because the heart knows something else. And the graph is broken. So when you lied, can be found through the graph. The graph becomes shaken or broken. For example, if somebody is asking you, what is the time in your watch? You look and you say, 9 o'clock. There is no need to lie. The graph is there, is smoothly running. And somebody asks, how many people are here? And you count and you say, 10. There is no need to lie. The graph is going smooth. Then the person asks, are you the murderer of this man? Your heart says yes, because it knows. And you say no. So there is a conflict between the heart and you. And that conflict shakes the graph. And it can be caught hold that where this man lied. So the psychiatrist suggested now this Abraham Lincoln has to be put on the lie detector. There only we will be able to see whether he is lying or not. Now the man who was Abraham Lincoln has got fed up with all kinds of treatments and psychiatry and medicine and tranquilizers and all kinds of suggestions and everybody pretending to be wise and patronizing him. So he decided that day that it is better now to say, although I am Abraham Lincoln, but it is better to say I am not, be finished with it. Inside I know that I am, but for the outside, just tell and be finished with it. Otherwise, life will become a problem. Standing on the lie detector, when they ask other questions, he answered. And when they came to the real question and they asked, are you Abraham Lincoln? He said, no. And the detector said, he is lying. He got so much in tune with the idea. Because in the deepest core, he knows he is. Now just on the surface is lying. If this happens, then you are a worldly man. That is my definition of a worldly man, who gets into his act and forgets to come out and remains hooked there. This is the worldly man. And who is a sannyasin, the otherworldly? The man who goes on playing acts, knows they are acts, never gets hooked into any act. When comes home, plays the act that he is husband and the father and the wife. These are all games. Play beautifully. Play artistically, aesthetically. But there is no need to get hooked that you are a father, that you are a mother, that you are this or that. You are a doctor, you are an engineer, you are this and that. These are functions. When you are treating a patient, be into the role of being a doctor. But there is no patient and you are sitting alone in your room, there is no need to be a doctor. Otherwise, you are doing the same stupidity as that man who became Abraham Lincoln. I used to stay in Calcutta at a friend's house. He was, in those days, a justice of the High Court. Now he is a chief justice somewhere. His wife told me that my husband respects you so much, he loves you so much, that you are the only person who can be of some help to me. I said, what is the matter? She said, he is always the justice, even in home. Even with children, he never comes out of that role. Not only that, she said, even in bed with me, while he is making love, he is the justice. And I have to treat him, Your Majesty, Your Honor. He expects that. And I feel as if I am a criminal, standing before him always to be judged, and the whole house becomes sad when he comes in. When he goes out, there is joy that the justice is gone. This is happening to almost everybody, more or less. I call this man worldly, who does not know how to play a game and gets too much serious about it. My sannyasin is a new entry into the world of religion. He will live in the world, he will play all kinds of games, and he will know that these are all games. And he will never be hooked by any game. And he will be able always easily to get out of any act. And he will go on searching for his original face. He will not be lost in the acts that he has to put up with. This is of immense importance. If he lives in the world in a worldly way, he becomes dead. If he becomes an old traditional kind of sannyasin, he shrinks and becomes dead. Both are ways of death. Life is where opposites meet. Life is where day and night meet. Life is in the world and only for those who can remain beyond it. Be a lotus flower in the water and untouched by it. The fourth question. I am much confused about the following question. I am trained as a physician, and I have always felt deeply that it is a good thing. But intrinsic in my work, in my activity, is a refusal to accept illness and death, disease and human suffering. Very deeply, therefore, is a refusal to accept life or existence as it is. Very deeply is a desire to correct some of these mechanisms of nature. All my professional activity is goaded by a fear, a very deep personal fear of sickness, suffering and death. I do not know how to view my work in the light of the whole. Please show the light of existence on this area of confusion for me. This is a significant question. But the question arises because of a wrong attitude in Western medicine. In the East, we have a totally different outlook. The polar opposite to Western medicine is the Taoist attitude about medicine. You will have to understand a few things. First, the questioner says, I am much confused about the following question. I am trained as a physician, and I have always felt deeply that it is a good thing. But intrinsic in my work, in my activity, is a refusal to accept illness and death, disease and human suffering. Now, a distinction has to be made. Illness, disease and suffering are one thing. Death is totally different. In the Western mind, illness, disease, suffering and death are all together, packed in one package. From there, problem arises. Death is beautiful. Illness is not. Suffering is not. Disease is not. Death is beautiful. Death is not a sword that cuts your life. It is like a flower, ultimate flower, that blooms at the last moment. It is the peak. Death is the flower on the tree of life. It is not the end of life, but the crescendo. It is the ultimate orgasm. There is nothing wrong in death. It is beautiful. One only needs to know how to live and how to die. And there is an art of living and there is an art of dying. And the second art is of more value than the first art. But the second can be known only when you have known the first. Only those who know how to live rightly know how to die rightly. And then death is the door into the divine. So first thing, please keep death apart. Only think of illness, disease and suffering. You need not fight against death. That is creating trouble in the Western mind, in the Western hospitals, in Western medicine. People are fighting against death. People are almost vegetating in the hospitals, just alive on drugs. Are forced to live unnecessarily. Naturally, they would have died. So medical support, their death is being postponed. They are of no use. Life is of no use for them. The game is over. They are finished. Now to keep them alive is just to make them suffer more. Sometimes they may be in a coma. And a person can be put in a coma for months and years. But because there is an antagonism against death, it has become a great problem in the Western mind. What to do when a person is in a coma and will never recover, but can be kept alive for years. But he will be a corpse, just a breathing corpse, that's all. He will simply vegetate. There will be no life. What is the point? Why not allow him to die? There is a fear of death. Death is the enemy. How to surrender to enemy, to death? So there is great controversy in the Western medical mind. What to do? Should a person be allowed to die? Should a person be allowed to decide whether he wants to die? Should the family be allowed to decide whether they would like, because sometimes the person may be unconscious and he cannot decide. But is it right to help somebody to die? And great fear arises in the Western mind. To die? That means you are murdering the person. The whole science exists to keep him alive. Now this is stupid. Life in itself has no value. Unless there is joy, unless there is dance, unless there is some creativity, unless there is love, life in itself is meaningless. Just to live is meaningless. A point comes when one has lived. A point comes when it is natural to die, when it is beautiful to die. Just as you have been doing work the whole day, then a point comes when you fall asleep. Death is a kind of a sleep, a deeper sleep. You will be born again in a newer body, with a newer mechanism, with new facilities, with new opportunities, new challenges. This body is old and one has to leave it. It is a dwelling. But there are people who are even afraid of sleep. Just 2 days before I was reading a book, and the man says there is no need to sleep. It is a wastage of time. A person lives almost one third of his life in sleep, and that is not living at all, because he creates nothing. He works not. What is the point of keeping a man asleep? Sooner or later they will start finding drugs so that a man can avoid sleep completely. Just think of the world where sleep will become impossible and they won't allow you to even sleep. In Russia, they have invented instruments to teach children while they are asleep. Now you will not leave even sleep alone. hypno-teaching. A tape recorder is connected, and the whole night the tape recorder goes on teaching mathematics, history, geography. The child has been tortured the whole day in the school. Now you cannot even allow him rest. The Western mind is too much utilitarian. It does not believe in rest. It believes in work. Its whole ethos is that of work, not of relaxation. And in the morning the child has to go to school again. Now you will create more neurotic people in the world if you don't allow even sleep. And this man suggests that there is a possibility that through some drugs sleep can be completely removed. And a man can live awake for 70 years. Just think of the nightmares. These are the people who are against sleep. They are against death too. They are against of any kind of relaxation. Let go. Just go on fighting. In the East, we have a different outlook. Death is not the enemy, but the friend. Death gives you rest. You have become tired. You have lived your life. You have known all the joys that can be known in life. You have burnt your candle totally. Now go into darkness, rest for a while, and then you can be born again. Death will revive you again in a fresher way. So first thing, death is not the enemy. Second thing, death is the greatest experience in life if you can die consciously. And you can die consciously only if you are not against it. If you are against, you become so panicky, so afraid, that there is a natural mechanism in the body. When you are too much afraid that you cannot tolerate that fear, the natural mechanism releases drugs in the body and you become unconscious. There is a point beyond which endurance will not be possible. You become unconscious. So millions of people die unconsciously and miss a great moment, the greatest of all. It is samadhi. It is satori. It is meditation happening to you. It is a natural gift if you can be alert and you can see that you are not the body. And you will have to see, because body will disappear. Soon you will be able to see that you are not the body, you are separate. Then you will see you are separating from the mind too. Then the mind will disappear. And then you will be just a flame of awareness. And that is the greatest benediction there is. So first, don't think of death as illness, disease and human suffering. Second thing, illness, disease and suffering are bad because they happen only when you are not natural. Something has gone wrong. Health is natural. Death is natural, but disease is not natural. Disease is simply an indication that something is going wrong in your nature. For example, you have eaten too much and there is pain in your stomach. This pain is not natural. You have done something unnatural. You have not slept for 2-3 days because you were running after money and it was not possible for you to sleep. Or you were fighting an election and it was not possible to sleep or afford that much time to sleep. You were on an election campaign. So you have not slept for 3 days and now the head is going neurotic, bursting. There is great pain in the head. This is just a symptom. Nature is saying to you that come back to me, you have gone too far away. Man is free and he can be unnatural. All kinds of diseases happen only when we go somewhere astray from nature. If man lives naturally, there will be no disease. But man cannot live continuously naturally, because man also has freedom. Sometimes you can eat a little too much, that is your freedom. And sometimes you can go on a fast, that is to your freedom. Man is the only animal in the world who has freedom, that is his dignity. But freedom brings dangers. The first danger is you can go against nature. And the nature is so polite that it does not shout, it whispers. The nature is so silent, its voice is very still and small. It goes on saying that don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And it goes on tolerating. There is a point beyond which it cannot tolerate and the disease erupts. Now what the physician is meant to do? In the East, the physician does not fight disease. The physician is not meant to destroy the disease. The physician is simply meant to bring the man back to nature. The questioner asks, but intrinsic in my work, in my activity, is a refusal to accept illness, disease and human suffering. Very deeply, therefore, is a refusal to accept life or existence as it is. Very deeply is a desire to correct some of these mechanisms of nature. Yes, the desire is perfectly right, but it is not to correct some mechanisms of nature, it is to correct some mechanism which has gone against nature. The physician is not correcting nature, he is only correcting man. And this is a totally different vision. The physician is not correcting nature. Nature is always correct. Sometimes man can be wrong because he has freedom. The physician corrects man. You will be surprised to know that in China there has been a traditional concept, a very ancient tradition, that when a person falls ill, then he stops his physician paying. Otherwise, he has to pay. If the person remains healthy, he has to pay. If he falls ill, then he stops paying. That means the physician has not been looking for nature and has not been helping his nature and has not been helping him to keep right in tune with nature. The physician has failed. This is a very strange outlook. You go to the doctor and you pay when you are ill. In China, they have been paying for centuries when they are healthy. They go to their doctor and pay because they are healthy. The doctor keeps them healthy. When they are ill, they stop paying. Why they should pay? The doctor has not been doing his job. His job is to keep people natural. This will be the vision of the future. Sooner or later in the world, this vision has to come. The doctor is not against nature. The doctor is only putting people right because people have freedom to go wrong. They can go astray. So there is no need to keep yourself miserable that you are doing something good, but then there is a refusal of disease and illness. Yes, there is a refusal of disease and illness. But disease and illness are not natural. They are going astray. You put men right. You are not fighting against the whole. You are fighting for the whole against the man. Let it be looked in this way. The questioner has asked that I am afraid as if I am fighting against the whole. If the whole wants disease, then let it be there. If this is the will of the whole, then let it be there. I should surrender. No, you are not fighting the whole when you are fighting the disease. You are fighting a part who is going against the whole. If the part is going in tune with the whole, in harmony, there will be no disease, no illness. But man has freedom. And with freedom, many dangers enter. If you go into the forest, into the jungle, you will be surprised that animals are almost never ill. I am not talking about the animals who live in a zoo. They are ill. They have become human imitators. To live with humans is very dangerous. But in a jungle, living in a wild situation, animals live and die. They are never ill. They never eat too much because they don't have that much freedom. They never fast. They don't have that much freedom. They don't have that much consciousness. They don't do anything that is unnatural. They go on doing the natural thing and they keep healthy. Once I went into a reserve forest with few of my friends. One lady was with me who was really fat. Exceptionally fat. He was just sitting by my side in the jeep when we went into the forest. That forest has thousands of deers. And a row of deers was passing and we were watching. I told the lady, just watch for one thing, if you find any deer, fat. Thousands of deers passing. And the lady became very, very embarrassed because she could not find a single deer who was fat. They were all alike. Not a single fat deer. Because deers can't eat too much. And when deers don't eat too much, they never have to diet. There is no need. Physician is not needed. Illnesses like tuberculosis or cancer don't happen in nature. Cancer happens only at a very higher kind of civilization. In India, the ancient name for tuberculosis is the royal disease. It used to happen only to kings. It is called Raj Yakshama. Only to the kings. It has never had happened to poor people. It can't happen. A poor person can't suffer that much for tuberculosis to happen. Then by and by poor people became rich. Then the tuberculosis became more and more available to everybody. Cancer is a new phenomenon. It is absolutely new. It is not mentioned in any ancient medicine manual, Taoist or Hindu. It is absolutely new. It had to wait for 20th century to happen. A great tension is needed for it to happen. So unnatural tension is needed for it to happen that it was not possible before. Only we can afford cancer. We have become affluent enough to have it. And our minds are going neurotic in desires. In all directions we are running. We are falling apart. You need not be worried that you are fighting against nature or against whole. You are not fighting against nature. You are fighting against the stupidity of the past who has gone against the whole. You are bringing him back to the whole. And remember always, a physician never heals. He cannot heal. He can only make healing force of the whole available to the patient. It is the whole that heals. It is not the physician, it is not the medicine either that heals. The medicine and the physician and the hospital all bring the part back close to the whole where healing happens. The physician and the medicine are just instrumentals. You need not be worried. You are in service of nature. You can be happy that you are doing something beautiful. The last question. There are two questions connected. First, a couple of years ago, I had all the symptoms of a heart attack and was taken to hospital for 5 days, but there was no heart attack. And lately I hear that other people have had the same feeling. What does it mean? The question is from Sheila. And the second question is from Satya. So many people at the ashram seem to be having something happening to their heart recently. Pain in the heart, burning in the heart, feeling like their heart is about to break with love, with gratitude. I have a tickle in my heart. Sheila says, when your long arm hit her in the lecture the other day, she felt it in her heart. What is happening? First, the physical heart is not your real heart. The real heart exists just behind the physical heart. The real heart is not part of your physical mechanism at all. The real heart exists in the soul. It is the center of the soul. The physical heart is the center of the body, and the spiritual heart is the center of the soul. They both exist together side by side. Just behind the physical is the spiritual heart. And it is going to happen to many people, this misunderstanding. When the spiritual heart starts open, you will have ripples in your physical heart too. It corresponds. They are very close together. When something vibrates in the spiritual heart, you will feel echoes in the physical heart too. In fact, first you will feel only in the physical heart because you don't know anything about the spiritual heart. Your first awareness of it will be of the physical heart getting into some strange feel. Sometimes it can be that of burning, sometimes it can be that of throbbing, sometimes it can be that of bursting, sometimes it can be that of almost like a heart attack. It has been happening down the ages to all meditators. Whenever people go deep in meditation, this is bound to happen. The spiritual heart starts trembling, opening, the petals bloom. And the physical heart starts catching the vibrations, the echoes. But this is a beautiful sign. Don't be afraid of it. Soon, you will become aware of the spiritual heart, then all symptoms from the physical will disappear. First symptoms will be of uneasiness, restlessness. It always is so because something new happens and you are not accustomed to it. When you will become a little more accustomed, more harmonious with it, you will see it is not restlessness. It was just the new taste. that you had not known before. It disturbed you. Well acquainted, well known, it will give you a new kind of peace, silence. And great love will arise out of it. Just 2 days before, one old sannyasi came to me and he said that a strange thing has happened, and he is very old, 70 or 75. That I had a feeling of heart attack and I went to the doctor and they examined and they said there is nothing wrong. And I am absolutely healthy and normal. So what is happening to me? I told him jokingly that it was not a heart attack, it was a love attack. Yes, when your spiritual centers start opening, you will have love attacks. Your body will feel the trembles, the restlessness. Soon it will settle. And when it settles, you will have a new being, a new plane of being. You have moved from the physical to the spiritual. Between the physical heart and the spiritual heart is the mind. That is the only barrier. The whole effort of meditation is to disperse the mind. Once the mind is dispersed, the physical heart and the spiritual heart both start dancing together. Then a great beauty arises. And it is not only spiritual, it will be seen in your physical face too. A grace. A new quality of energy around you. And not only that, you will feel it, others will feel it too. You will have a new vibe. This is going to happen to many people because so many people are meditating. And they are really working hard. But I am not saying that if sometimes you start feeling something going wrong in the heart, you are not to go to the physician, you have to go. Because sometimes it may be a heart attack. You have to go. If it is not a heart attack, the physician will say to you that it is not. But you have to check it. And this question is important because it is relevant to many of you. To many it has happened, and to many it is going to happen, and to many more. But always when you have something happening in the body, go to the physician and be checked. If it is not anything, there is no problem. If there is something, you can take medicine. So don't think that it is always the spiritual heart. Because sometimes it may not be. Sometimes it may be the physical. And if you don't go to the physician, you can be in a danger. Enough for today.